Hi, Nora.
Hi, Daddy.
How are you?
Good.
Good. Hey, what kind of music do you like?
Marshmallow.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Welcome to Beyond the Band. My next guest has been a drummer on a drum line. Welcome, Luke.
Hey, Michael. How you doing?
I'm good, man. How are things up there in Alaska? Is it still snowing?
No, it hasn't snowed in a couple days. Got some clouds, though, but it's around 40 degrees, so we shouldn't see snow for a little bit.
See, when you told me you were moving there, I started researching the weather, and I was just under the impression you were going to get there in September, and it was going to be a blizzard. So
That was kind of my impression.
Right.
By October, I was like, okay, October 1st, we're going to have snow. Not
right.
Quite the case yet, but it's coming.
I was like, dude, you're going to need to get a parka and, you know, one of those ski masks that covers your ears and everything. I was scared.
You know, I've learned I might need something that covers my nose because it was real windy the other day and real cold. And I was like, my nose hurts. Like, it was that cold. So,
I mean, one of those ski masks that where, you know, you just your eyes are out and your mouth, you know?
Yep.
And you might need some of those serious, like, those snowboarder goggles, too, you know? If you get too crazy. That way.
I'll see what other people do during blizzards, and I might do the same. But it may look weird walk around with goggles on. We'll see.
Gosh. Yeah. So, tell me about the was it a poetry reading you did the other day?
What was that? Yeah. So there's a local poet. I bought her book. I think her name is Caitlin.
Okay.
Oh, shoot. It's over where all my other books are. It's not in reach. But she is a local poet from Alaska, born and raised. She got to read some of her poetry. And Wordsworth, William Wordsworth, was an influence for her. So
Tell the people who that is, who aren't so well-cultured and educated as you.
Well, actually, I just learned about Wordsworth myself.
Oh, okay.
I maybe heard the name, but Wordsworth was an English poet, and he kind of spearheaded, or he became the poet for the Romanticism era.
Okay.
Early 1800s to mid-1800s is when he was active. So his poetry is known for just, like, plain English. You know, a lot of poets are you know, stuff like that.
Sure.
And he's just like, he wanted to use words that normal people used. And so that's what his poetry is about. It's pretty easy to read. And so maybe 10 people in this group that they go, it's called the Poetry Parley, and they go once a month, every third Wednesday. And so mostly the same people go up and read poets. And so since the poet of the month, the local poet, chose Wordsworth, we all read Wordsworth. So I got to go up on a little stage and read some Wordsworth.
And it looked like there were a lot of people there too.
Probably about 20, 25. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
Yeah. It's a good little event. I have fun. I met a guy there. His name's Cary Feldman, about his book too. He wrote a book of short stories. He's a retired professor and, actually sent him a chapter of my book I'm currently working on, and he's going to look it over and edit it and give us some feedback, which is really great. I need that kind of stuff. So really nice guy.
Nice.
And his wife took the picture.
Cool.
She said, I thought your family would want to see that. I'm like, yep, my mom would love that. So yeah, it's just, you know, now
really
to meet some people.
I love when people are thoughtful like that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's really nice.
That's good. That's good. I'm proud of you for doing that, getting after it.
Thanks, Michael.
Yeah. That's great. So I wanted to talk to you about, we always had music on as, you know, kids, as a family.
Oh, yeah.
And, And it's funny because even as a little kid, I remember mom always saying, you know, she would say to you, well, you know, you could be a drummer. I don't know if that was like a knock on your singing abilities or what. I don't know what, like, it was like, oh, you're going to be over here in the drummer category. But then you actually ended up doing it. You were on a drum line at Oregon State. How did that come to be?
I was in the dorm, Hossail Hall at Oregon State University. And just like in any dorm, from my experience anyway, you just make friends with people in the hall in the same floor, right. You know. And so people would leave their doors open. So I made friends with a room down the hall, a few girls, and one of them was in the drum line. And she mentioned, hey, we got a spot open on the drum line. Like, we're short some people. Do you have any drum experience? I said, no. She's like, that's okay. Come to practice. And we'll let you bang on a drum and see how you do. And so,
nice.
You know, I played band in middle school. I played the clarinet. And so that was my previous music experience, really.
Right.
So I kind of just picked up the bass drum. I got the smallest one because it's the most quiet one, basically. You know, it's not going to be the most obvious if you mess up. And right. I didn't really learn. I didn't use a sheet music. I just, you know, I can kind of keep a rhythm and I can kind of get the what I'm supposed to play and follow the lead. So that's what I did. You know, I just followed the lead. And I learned as I went. There's a couple songs I never got to learn because I just couldn't read sheet music. You know, most of us couldn't, or maybe half of us couldn't read sheet music, actually. We called ourselves a JV of the band because there's only about a dozen of us. We didn't play with the actual OSU band. We went out.
Right.
And we tailgated. You know, we were the fun crowd. You know, we messed around. And I'm sure the band messes around. But it was a small, tight unit. It was really fun. Great instructor. So I was just lucky. I just got lucky and it was a fun experience.
That's so cool, though, how, you know, that girl you met, what was her name?
Serena.
Serena. So cool how she was like, it's okay. You don't need any experience. Come try it. I mean, you know, that's how stuff happens sometimes, you know? And I mean, she could have easily said, oh, okay, I'll try to find someone else. You know what I mean? Like, good on her, first of all. But how many did you do it for? Just one season?
Or was it multiple? I think I did it through the winter. I remember going to football games, soccer games, volleyball games.
Oh, wow. So you did all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. I did a few different things. What else did we do? So I think I did it there, and that kind of levels out during the spring, and I didn't rejoin the next year or anything. Okay. So a few months, you know.
What made you not want to rejoin it? Just too much going on, or?
So I moved off campus. You know, I got an apartment off campus.
Oh, yeah.
The easy thing, right. Living on campus, practice was a 5-minute walk away, you know.
Right.
So I wasn't surrounded. You know, Serena was down the hall. We could practice together, hang out. We'd talk about it, stuff like that. So I just wasn't in the environment. And yeah, I was doing other things. That's when I joined the creative writing group. Yeah. So I joined a different group. I had the experience. I didn't want to. Yeah, I just felt like I took advantage of the opportunity, and I was glad I did it. So
the bass drum, was that something that you did you wear that? Like, how does that work? Or did you just carry it around? I mean, how did that actually work? Could you carry it around the tailgate and put like a beer on top of it? Okay.
Some people put not on mine because it. Yeah. So we have straps. We got metal straps. It sits on your shoulders with pads, you know.
Right.
And then it's attached to this basically metal harness. You've got a little bass drum in front of you, and so.
And are you banging on the side of it or on down on
no,
the
on
top
the side?
Of it?
Okay. So you got two sides to work with.
Yeah.
And that's how the bass drums worked anyway, because, you know, the tenors, they, you know, people did put a beer or two on people's drums when they were drumming. And, yeah, tailgating got pretty rambunctious. But, I mean, hey, when people are drunk in a parking lot and we're playing music for them, they'll tip you pretty well. So we got we got a good band fund. We went.
Oh, you got tipped.
Oh, yeah. Not me specifically. Oh, nice. More of the more attractive band members, I guess you could say. But yeah, we got tipped and we saved it for a camp.
Basically, the girls.
No, it was mostly the guys.
Okay. Oh, the guys got
tipped. Well, because like there's the two main guys, Zach and I forget the other guy's name. They played the same drum, which had like four drums in front of them. I think that was the tenor, and so they do a drum off. You know, one would play and then the other would play in the line right next to each other.
Gotcha.
You know, kind of like Drumline, the movie.
Yep.
And then Zach, he was the band leader. He would come out and face him and just drum on his, on the other guy's drum.
Oh, that's awesome.
So we were making a show. That's cool. We were making a show.
Yeah. That's cool. Mm-hmm. That's cool. It is probably mostly older people tailgating, right? I mean, I know there's younger people there too, but.
Oh, I mean, not a lot of college students
hang out.
Yeah, older.
Right.
Older
crowd. Yeah, the college students didn't hang out in the parking lot, did they?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Yeah. That's cool. And then during the game, it was like you guys were like in between plays and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, since we're smaller, we're more mobile. So we're on the field behind the teams.
Oh.
And so.
Oh,
the
cool.
Actual band had to stay up in their section, you know, and they, of course, they got to go on the field for halftime show or whatever. But so we didn't play the first quarter because we were tailgating and, you know, wrapping that up. And so we'd get into the stadium near end of first quarter, take a little break, and then start second quarter. We start just moving around the field, you know, playing for the crowd during breaks and stuff. You can't play during the game. So it was the best way to watch football because you just. Drum for about 30 seconds. You got to stop when the ball's in play. You just kind of look over and you watch the ball. Okay, you go drum it again.
And could you, were you sitting in the stands or were you on the field behind the
On the field, yeah.
Yeah. So could you see, so you could see the action?
Yeah, right there.
Or were they?
Okay. Basically right behind the the bench, right behind the players.
Wow. Yeah. That's
pretty cool. I did probably four or five games, I think. Four home games we had. I was able to go to one game. I think it was the last game. We worked with the cheerleaders. We practiced with the cheerleaders a couple times. And we learned a routine of theirs. And they learned a drum line of ours.
That's great.
And so we switched during the game. So it was pretty funny.
How did that work? What do you mean you switched?
We did a little dance routine. We had their pom-poms. So we did a little dance routine.
Oh, my
and the,
gosh.
The cheerleaders picked up our drums. We taught them our parts of a drum, like of a one song that we did. Yeah, it was pretty funny.
That's fantastic. Yeah. And didn't you say, I mean, Oregon State's had kind of a tough stretch the last 10 years or so, but didn't you say like one of the games you left early and it was when they actually came back and won?
That was a game I attended like the next year. That was
okay.
Dan and I still talk about that because we were trying to catch a field goal. You know, they kicked the ball. We were
right
in the stands. Right would be like pretty perfect. We could just run down and catch a field ball and just get the hell out because they would want the ball back. But it was too cold, and Sabrina wanted to go home. So I can't blame her for that. Dan and I are always going to be like, the one game that they won because they were playing ASU, if I remember correctly. They came back to win it.
Sabrina. Yep. He still married her, though.
He did. Must not be that big of a Beavers fan or must not worry that much.
Yep. Right, right.
ASU football is not that important when it comes down.
Oh, man. Baseball is pretty good, though. I think they won the – oh, was it – were you still there when they won the championship?
It was a year after I left. Yep. And I never got to go. I never went to a baseball game in that stadium. Okay. Although I did hop the fence one night and run around on the field.
That's pretty cool. I don't think U of O has a drum line.
I think it's just the band. I've never, unless it's, I've just never noticed it.
Yeah, I'm
but
not.
I've never.
I'm not sure. It. We're kind of unofficial, you know. We're like, we're official. Okay. I had to pay, and I got a uniform, the same as the band uniform.
Oh wow! Okay, that's cool.
But we're just like JV, you know, just kind of
right. So you got to pay for the pleasure of being on the drum line.
Yes, of course. It was college. You pay for everything.
Like an entrance fee? Oh.
Mm-hmm. No, it's like $100, yeah. $150. It's like a, yeah, it was like a high school sports. You know, you pay, I think, basically for like using the uniform, right. Stuff like that, in case you break something. Yeah.
I don't think the football players have to pay. Especially the guys on scholarship. I think they have it
pretty
good.
Bet you they don't. You know, those guys, especially near the end of the term, the semester, if you knew a football player, or if there was one even in like near your dorm or whatever, they had so much food allowance. And one, because they would get free food from like events and stuff. But their food allowance was normally higher. That they would just be like, guys, like get like 5 or 6 people. Just be like, I got your food. For like the last week, because then it runs out and resets the next semester. So just spend the crap out of that food allowance.
So they're
taken care of.
Is that because they got extra? Yeah. So that's because they got extra as part of their being on the football team or whatever, or part of their scholarship.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you could purchase extra. So I don't know if they did that, but again, there are so many events like. Oh, you know, like team dinners or something like that, that they would go to. Somebody would feed them. It's just like you're around this big community. You're just going to get free food somehow. So they just had extra money.
Yeah.
Whatever the case was.
Yeah. Right. That's awesome. So what do you remember about music as a kid though, in our house?
Oh, constantly playing, you know, especially living in the desert, just, like, I remember Sheryl Crow for some reason. So, like, just bright windows, you know, sunshine, good vibes. Just following along. Yep. But I remember, you know, at Mimi and Papa's house, the great-grandparents' house, just the family coming together. Almost every single family member had some musical ability or at least appreciated it. And so it's just at some points you just don't. You know, especially as a little kid, you don't realize what's going on or you don't have the appreciation for it. But thankfully, I have memories. We did it enough where it's just like ingrained in me that, you know, that's what we did. Right. And that's what you do as a family. You just come together and it's like, oh, somebody brought up the guitar and this is normal. We're going to be jamming or listening to a jam session for a while. So,
I think it's so important, you know. It's funny you mentioned everyone had some kind of interest, or I don't know that that's entirely true. And I'm going to call out Brian right now because I remember, I think we were gathering, I think it was a Christmas, you know, gathering at Mimi and Papa's, and there was music happening out in the family in the living room, and the guys were back in the den watching football. Uh-huh. Like the playoffs were on at that time, or, you know, something like that. And I remember him saying, Michael, can you close the door? And Mom used to say too that he used to get mad at her for singing and stuff.
Yeah,
so
well,
kind of funny.
What Mom said, that she would sing the jingles from like the TV ads and stuff over and over again. Is what I remember her saying.
Well, you can't really blame him for that. Then that's
the younger brother. Trust me, I know some things that sometimes you don't get the full story.
That's great. Do you remember the Judds being on? Do you remember
the
that
Judds?
You were pretty young. Yeah.
So.
Like Wynonna Judd.
Oh, I mean, I know the name Wynonna, probably in Mom's Seeking. Okay. I can't think of it like a specific Wynonna song, but yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay. So did you, like, when you were in band in school, were you excited about that, or was it kind of like an obligation?
No, I was excited. I liked my middle school band. The thing was about Fleming Middle School, the band was better than North Valley High School. We had a marching band. There were more people. Just it was because of the band teacher.
Yeah.
You know, the teacher was better.
Right.
So strict, but that's how you had a good band. Like, he was just a good band teacher.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, as a sixth grader, I joined band for a girl, and I played the clarinet for a girl. Because I was the only guy clarinet player. I kind of wanted amazing. To play the saxophone, but I played the clarinet. So.
Oh, you could have learned some Careless Whisper.
It would have been sweet. I know how things would have been different, but I had fun with it. You know, I had fun doing the we did Boatnik. You know, we did the marching band and Pear Blossom a couple times, and you know, we won awards because we were just so good. It was fun. That was fun.
Yeah.
You know, I was in the front row being the clarinet section. That's where you marched. You were in the front. So I was basically like the leader, one of the leaders rather. Yeah. Although I wasn't that good of a clarinet player. I was definitely, you know, I was in the middle in the front again, because like the little bass drum, you're just surrounded by all the other noise. And you can't really, you know, if one clarinet right. is playing off key or playing the wrong stuff, you're not going to notice. But no, it wasn't bad. I had a lot of fun with that.
And you didn't do it in high school just because you played football, right? Is that the only reason?
I guess you could say just the general vibe. Like in our middle school, like when you're in class in middle school, we knew the high school wasn't good. Like we just knew. They didn't have a marching band. It was just not good. I mean,
interesting.
Megan. Yeah, Megan was in, I think she was in the North Valley band for some time. Not even the entire time. She did like choir and stuff, but and free design. But so I heard from her, you know, usually that was just a general word. This just wasn't as good. This was not as appealing to be in the high school band.
That's interesting, man. Yeah. That's too bad.
It's really,
I mean,
that
just goes to
really
show you though. Yeah. Yeah. It's just so having that continuity and, you know, it really can, it can be made or broken by, you know, the people running the program. Sometimes it's resources too, you know, when things get tight, that's sometimes one of the first things to go, and it's too bad. You know, that wasn't the case in Medford. When I was on the board, I mean, we invested like several hundred thousand dollars. I mean, we bought instruments. You know, helped make sure that those kind of things were well funded, because kids need something to be affiliated with, you know?
Yeah.
And band is such a good one. And music is just, so that's interesting. So you played clarinet and you were in your formative years when you're really like a sponge and learning stuff, but you did not learn sheet music, or
no,
did you learn
I learned sheet music in middle
forgot.
School. Yeah, that was a requirement.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Especially the clarinet right. with so many keys and stuff. You know, the drum doesn't really have
right.
keys. It's just hit the drum at this point. It was, you know, right. this right. time, this is when you hit it, and this is how many times you hit it. And this is when you stop hitting it, you know. That was the
right.
kind of the extent.
Right.
Not really, but yeah. If you break it down, clarinet, you had to learn sheet music, especially, you know, just the way, that's just how a band works. You have to know exactly. It's kind of like a football team, you know, everybody's got to make their blocks and stuff like that. So everybody's got to be on key at the right time. So it's
right.
a group of 30 to 40 of us. I remember one time as a warm up, we'd all play the same note at the same time, you know. And we do it a couple times, and then we did it once, and the band teacher stopped, and he's like, "Guys, that was so perfect. You sounded like one instrument." And I don't know if he was just saying that or what, but I mean, I felt it too. And I was like, "Holy moly!" Like, I was like, "Wow!"
Yeah.
It stuck out to me because that sound, all of us playing the same note, starting right at the same time and ending right at the same time, just sound like one cohesive instrument. And that's how it's supposed to be. You know, we're all different intricate little pieces, but we're one band. So
right. Do you think it helped you in other subjects? Like, do you think it carried over, like learning sheet music and the timing, and because it's math, right? And it's kinesthetic. You're connecting something you're doing with your body to your mind.
Yeah, it's definitely. I mean, I think it's beneficial. It's not only so. The first thing that came to my mind was being on time, because there were a lot of times during that, when I was in middle school, during that time, our mom was a substitute or a student teacher. And so one lesson I learned was not to leave the clarinet in her car, because then I'd be late for band class. Was just like a life lesson. You know, you just learn things along the way. Right. And so that was the first thing that came to mind. But of course, music helped me. Of course, band helped me. You know, I had a group of friends. It's better than just looking at a computer screen or doing something mindless. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to use your cognitive functions to make this, you know, piece of plastic or whatever the clarinet is made out of into a beautiful sound. And you have to work together and take instruction. And so it's just, there's so many things going on. Of course, it's great. It's creative. You know, it's
right.
Kind of making this and piecing this together. And this is something, you know, you're taking this, these little lines and dots on a piece of paper and playing your part, and that is music, and then everybody else does the same, and somehow it comes together. You're like, holy moly, look at this creative process. How did somebody create this? You know?
Yeah.
It's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
It's just helped me in more ways than I can even fathom, you know?
Yeah.
Especially before having a cup of coffee, but.
Right.
I'm super thankful for the time I had in the middle school band and in the drum line. Like, I learned a lot and met a lot of cool people. So that, if anything, that's what I got out of it.
Do you ever think about doing something musically again?
Oh, of course. When I was living in Medford, I started to collect multiple instruments. I had bongo drums. I had clarinet. I bought a trumpet. Chantel had a keyboard, so I was kind of messing around with that, trying to get some beats down, kind of just learn. Sure. How to use it. So I would love to, I've always wanted to learn how to play the piano. And so I would love to learn how to play the piano. That way I can sit down and play as you guys sing, or just play, you know, if I ever wanted to, because I always loved, and in college, there's at Oregon State University, there's a building called the Memorial Union, the MU. And there's this big room, fireplaces on each side, couches and chairs and tables to study. People would take naps in there. It's awesome. Big windows. This is the best place. I love to go in there. There's a piano there, and there's a little stand on the piano, piece of paper that said, only play if you know how to. This is not for practice. So people would go there and play, and it would just reverberate through that building. You could hear it from almost anywhere in this huge building. You could hear the piano playing, you know, at least somewhat. So if I was in the cafe on the other side of the building or in the food court, you can kind of hear it. And it would just bring me to that big room and listen to the piano for however long the person played, you know. So anybody who knew how to play the piano would play it. So I've always loved listening to the piano, always wanted to play it. So
yeah.
That's my next venture. If I can,
I think,
get a keyboard, and I think start you could, I
definitely
myself.
Do it.
Oh yeah. I know I could. I think I have a finger dexterity, you know. If not that, I would love to, I still have my clarinet at home. I would love to, start practicing that again.
Well, and you have rhythm too, and you really, that's so important. I've kind of struggled with, I can dink around playing just chords on the piano and stuff, but playing like two hands at once, that's tough. It's harder than it looks. And I think sort of your, you know, your background and ability to keep a beat, and I think it helps. I don't know. Maybe I'm just, you know, throwing out theories.
But, hopefully it helps.
Yeah,
hopefully.
Yeah, I think it would. And I don't buy the whole, I definitely think it's easier to learn something when you're younger, just because I think it's just time.
It is time.
Really is what it comes down to, you know? Yeah, I go back to Outliers, you know, the whole idea that it takes so many hours to get good at something and then, you know, 10,000 hours to master it. And I think it's just because we have more time when we're younger, you know, to dedicate to learning something new. But I don't buy it that you can't learn it just because you're older.
I believe an old dog can learn new tricks. So, and I'm not that old. Yeah, I'm 26 and relatively young. I mean, I'm not going to become a master pianist. You know, I'm not going to be playing the piano on a stage anytime soon. But if I can learn it and play with the family, yeah, that's kind of my goal.
Yeah,
that's where I want to take it.
That'd be awesome. That'd be fantastic.
Right, because again, we've already talked about it. I don't have the singing ability, or I could learn it, but I just don't have the, rather play.
I've never even really heard you sing that.
Yeah,
much.
I don't sing.
I'm not that I've, much. I've never heard you sing.
But
I don't think.
I've sung along, sing with some songs. And stuff, but I've never. But the problem is with words. I don't know the words, I'm just terrible with learning words of songs. And so somehow, like you, Mom, and Megan just know the words. Maybe you listen to the song a few times or whatever. Or you listen to it enough where you just, I mean, I guess you have the words in front of you, but it's just, in my brain, it's kind of like reading the sheet music, but it's different. Getting the words to match up with all the other sounds going on at the same time. It's like something I don't have.
It's muscle memory. It's really what it is. And I, cause I mean, you know, I have the words to like, I mean, our band has about 50 songs now in our list that we do. And I pretty much have all of them down, but it's kind of mnemonics and word association that helps me memorize, the lyrics, but it's also just, repetition. It's amazing how many times I'll be singing, like I'll sing the first verse of a song and then I'll sing the chorus. And then as I'm singing the chorus, I'm thinking to myself, oh shit, I don't remember the words to the second verse. It's not coming to me, but then I'll finish the chorus and we'll start the second verse and it'll just come like that. And so that's where I think the muscle memory kicks in. And so, it just takes, and I think people who haven't really sung a lot, like in front of people and stuff, I think that's an acquired skill, you know, especially if your background is the opposite and just looking at, like, I can't read sheet music.
Right. Well,
which is kind of crazy, but
I couldn't read sheet music. I couldn't read sheet music right now. If you told me to play something on the clarinet or some instrument with sheet music, I wouldn't be able to do it for you. But yeah, you're right. It's just muscle memory, kind of letting yourself, just letting your body, take over. You're like, if I don't think about it too hard, it'll kind of happen. And that's kind of what does happen.
And not having, like, I used to have like the lyrics to every song in like a songbook or on an iPad or something. And it becomes a crutch. So I learned the words better once I ditched the iPad. And then I found out it actually helped me connect more with the song and actually think about, put meaning when I'm singing the song to the words, as opposed to just reading them off, off a screen or something. So, but yeah, it's a tough one, but if you do it enough, with enough repetition, like when I'm learning a song, I'll listen to it 20 times in a row and sing along to it.
Right.
And then you can find like a karaoke version on YouTube or something and sing along to that. And, it's a good way to practice, but yeah, no, that's cool. That's funny that somebody put a sign that said, don't play. I wonder who put that sign there. Was it somebody from the university or probably just a student who got tired?
I'd like to think it was a student.
Piano playing. That's
not the first time I've seen that. I've seen that at an airport or somewhere else too. It's like this, or maybe at a cafe.
Right.
This piano isn't for practice, but
I mean, it makes sense, right? But how many times have you seen a piano without that sign? And, right. Yeah.
It's true. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That's great. So what are you working on right now? You're working on some stories and some books?
Yeah. So after my poetry reading, talking to Carrie again and talking about my story and what he's been working on, he's got a book out and a publisher. And so I've been working on a novella And I got to about 20,000 words out of 30,000 planned. I planned about 15 chapters, about 30,000 words. And so I was about two-thirds of the way done with this little book here. And then I wrote a chapter. This was about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. And something came up. A new character kind of came into the fold. It developed a little bit more. I was like, oh, shoot. What is this? And where is this going to go?
Mm-hmm.
And so I, all of a sudden, this book, which I usually don't have a plan for, I usually go, if I write a story, especially short stories, or even my medieval novel I wrote in college, I didn't really know how I was going to end it. So this was the first book where I was like, okay, I know where this is going. Like, I know what's going to happen in the middle mostly, but really how it's going to end. I know where I want to end it. And then as I was writing it, something changed it. I was like, oh, shoot. Now I'm lost again. Now I don't know how I'm going to end this book. And so I had to take a little break. I wouldn't call it writer's block. It's not, you know, if I sit down, every time I sit down to write, I read what I have written before, whether it's a couple chapters. You know, it's getting to the length now where if I read the whole thing, it takes me an hour, if not a little more. But I'll have to do that here when I start writing again. So I had to take a break. It wasn't about thinking like, I don't want to overthink it. So I went on a walk yesterday, and during my walk, it kind of just came to me how I wanted this book to continue. And now it's going to be, if I had to guess, maybe 50 to 60,000 words. So it's going to double in length.
How do you know that? How do you know that it's going to double from the change that you made?
It's just the addition. It's just, I know that I can sit down, I can write a chapter about a 10-minute interaction. And that's okay. 10 pages, about 2,000 words.
Yeah.
And from there, you know, you just take one little piece and you continue. And then the next chapter can be that length. And it's just, I can write.
Yeah.
I mean, if I have any little inspiration, I can just build and build and build and build on it. And so I kind of know, I can kind of gauge where I want the story to, I know where I want the story to go and how I want it to end. And so therefore I know the main plot points. And I don't exactly know the fillers. I don't exactly know what's going to happen in the middle, what kind of interactions. And that's how this last chapter came about. It's just during the creative process, it came about naturally. And so I know I was just like inherent. It's like in my body, in my soul, I know how many words I have to express this idea and the story and this person's.
Wow.
Yeah, this person's story. So this person's life. So I just know about 60, probably about 60,000. I'd like it to be a little bit longer, but I don't want to stretch it too far because I don't have that much. I know I don't have, there's not that much story to tell, which is interesting.
Yeah. And how long will it take you to write those 60,000?
Well, I've already got 20,000, so it's really only 40,000 more.
Okay.
And I probably did those 20,000 in 2 weeks or so. So it might take me another month if I write diligently, you know, a chapter a day or two chapters in a day with a day break is what I was starting to do. So
is this the story you shared a chapter with the author?
Yes. I sent him the first chapter.
Okay.
I have a very strict rule on sharing my work when I'm working on it as I'm writing it, because if I sent you this whole document right now, I would get the gratification of somebody reading it or share it even if you read it, even just me sending the send button, you know, hitting the send button, I would get that gratification. I shared this story. Thinking that it's perfect, because the reason why I would like to have 80,000 words is because you'll cut probably 10 to 20,000 out. You're going to cut a lot. Right now it's just about dumping everything on the page that comes to mind. And then the edit process, you know, the strike throughs that this is redundant, this doesn't make sense, so forth and so on. There's, if I get 60,000 out, it might come out to about 45,000 words in a finished product ready for publication. So that's a few chapters.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, see, this is interesting because I think this relates to, I think writing a story relates to writing a song, right? And that's one thing I'm going to be asking when I interview musicians for the podcast. I'm going to be asking them about their process for how they write because I think everybody approaches it differently.
Yeah.
And a song is a story, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so I think there's so many parallels. And it's just incredibly interesting to me. Now, you know, that whole thing about knowing how many words you're going to end up cutting out, is that like how much of your process you got a minor in writing, right? Major in history, minor in writing. How much of your process is learned versus just your unique process and everybody kind of approaches it differently?
Well, I think everybody would approach it differently. What we talked about in our writing class wasn't really the writing process, but the what came of it, you know, your story. We're working on that. We kind of worked on the editing process. So it wasn't really about really technically the creative writing process. That's something I've learned. I've been writing, man, since I could write, since I was 5 years old. You know, I remember writing a story. Yeah. I don't know if it was really a story or what it was, but it made Mom cry. It was like my theory on the world. And I just loved writing, just like had these crazy ideas. I had this, I basically took reincarnation and took it to the max that we've been here. The whole entire human race has been here before. The scientists have discovered the same thing. The world ended. And this was me as like a little kid. And wow. So I wrote this whole page out. And so I wrote a story in a spiral notebook in fifth grade, you know, called Water Walkers. And I've just been, you know, this is my creative process I've worked on. Remember that 10,000 hours. I don't know what hour I'm on. I'm not at mastery, that's for sure. But I've just been working on this my entire life. So it's definitely learned. It definitely helps to be around other people who write and stuff like that. I would love to be, you know, I read about Hemingway or just these older authors, you know, like Wordsworth, even poets like Wordsworth, they had a community, you know, it's really, you surrounded yourself. They are surrounded by other authors, other people like them. And so I don't really have that. That's what I guess I'm looking for. People to bounce ideas off of and get feedback and to get the harsh truths. You know, it's like, hey, this page, you don't need it. This is shitty sentence structure, so on and so forth.
Right.
Yeah, so it's definitely part learned by myself, but it's definitely, it'll have to be molded and held up by others. That's for sure.
Is that pretty typical that you know when you're getting ready to write a story of any length, is that pretty typical that you know how it's going to end?
No, from the beginning? Not at all. I mentioned earlier that most other stories are written. I just wrote and just kind of threw up on the page and the story moved along.
Sure.
Especially because I've written, I don't know, 50-ish, maybe more short stories, depending on your definition of short story. Probably closer to 100 actually. But anyway, that's my main, I guess, area of expertise, if you could say. I haven't really written that many stories over even 5,000 words.
This is new territory.
This is probably the third. This is the third story. First was the novel in college. The medieval fantasy novel I wrote in college. That was 300 pages or about just under 100,000 words. So that was my first big endeavor, you know, this story.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So I think it was around 80,000 actually. Anyway, that story. So and then a novella I wrote while in Scotland, and that was all handwritten. And based on my estimates of word per page, a few pages, that was about 20,000 words. So this is my third, like, chapter story, if you will. You know, I have specific chapters, things happen, the story progresses. But most things I've written has just been, you know, I'm going to write until I feel satisfied. Or until I make sure that the reader isn't satisfied. I give them enough and then I stop writing.
Well, it sounds like you're finding a nice community up there in Anchorage. I mean,
yes.
Honestly, I think it's pretty good for given the. I mean, you've been there a month and a half.
Yeah.
And you've already met a few people connected to writing and poetry and those kind of things already.
That's yeah, I'm very lucky for sure.
Well, you're lucky. Well, but here's the thing. You've been getting out and meeting people.
Right.
That's the important part of it, right? I mean, if you were just sitting around in your house, in your room, you know, that wouldn't be happening. So I don't know. Steve, Carolina's dad always talks about you got to bother to bother, right? So have that extra conversation, talk to somebody you don't know. You know, get out when maybe you just want to stay home. You've done that. It's pretty cool. So this author, Carrie, has he given you any feedback yet, or he just got it and is still reading it? Or
I just sent it to him yesterday, and I haven't read his email, but he had to go run a few errands. I sent it to him pretty late. I sent it to him around 5:30 p.m. yesterday, and so
okay.
On a Friday night, you know, people got things to do. He'll read it this
week. But that's what you're expecting to get.
Sorry?
Okay, cool. You're expecting him to give you feedback then. That's why you sent it to him? Or just
he, to kind he of... wanted to, yeah, he wanted to read it. He told me, so cool. I read my poetry, or read, you know, Wordsworth, and he came up to me. He said, "You're a writer." I said, "Yeah." You know, I met him before, but we hadn't really talked about my writing. He talked about his writing, you know, and his book, and that's how I picked it up. But he said, "You're a writer." I'm like, "Yeah, how did you know?" He said, "You read like a writer." And so thanks, you know, but I'm reading poetry, so I don't know if that's a good thing. I was pretty nervous. I don't know why, you know, being in sales, I could just get up and talk in front of a whole bunch of people about sales. But when it comes to poetry and reciting something, I wasn't reciting, it wasn't from memory, but I was super nervous at first. But then after my second poem, I got to read for about 5 minutes. I felt more calm. So the next time I read, definitely going to be the next time. I need to joke more. I need to like get the energy out. I just had so much energy. I was literally shaking, you know, so I just have to get that energy out. I took a really good public speaking class in college. The professor was part of the Shakespeare Festival. And so an actor. So she, I still go back to some of the tips she had in that class at RCC in Medford, Oregon. The tips that she had for public speaking. And so I just need to get some of that excitement. You know, I'm not nervous. I'm excited. It's the same feelings. You know, it's the same like bodily reaction kind of, if you will. So I just need to
channel it, right? In a
positive and not negative. Yeah. And so, you know, because if you're nervous, it's kind of a negative annotation or connotation. He said I read like a writer. So yeah, I am expecting some feedback. I think he's really excited to read it. I don't know. You know, you and I talked about this a while ago. Looking for a mentor. And so I don't know if he's going to be my mentor. One of his short stories, and it was wonderful. It was a great short story. And it's just like, you know, sometimes I read stuff. I don't know if it's just because I'm biased. So if I read something that's published in, you know, it's a published book, it was self-published on Amazon, or no, it's not self-published. It's by a local actual publishing house. It's a small publishing house, Circa.
Okay.
So it's a good, you know, it's good paper. It's printed well, it's printed nice. And so I read that story. I'm like, wow, this is a good story. However, if I read a story, say if I'm in a class or if I'm reading a colleague's or a peer story, you know, in class in college, it just doesn't have that authenticity. And mm-hmm. it doesn't seem like a real story. Mm-hmm. It seems like this is what you can work on because that's just the mindset. You know, if it's already printed and published,
right,
then it's that's right. it. There's no going back. You know, there's no mistakes in here, or there better right. not be.
It's gone through a heavy mm-hmm. vetting process, and it's been just completely, just with a fine-tooth comb. It's been raked over the coals.
It's 10. Too. The thing with short stories and why I love short stories so much, I don't edit a lot of my short stories. I should, because every word matters. You know, it is like a song. A short story is like a song. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, a novel is like an album, if you will. The short story, you only have so much space, 10 pages, you know, a few thousand words. And if there's extraneous words in there, you're muddying your story. And you're, you know, it's just like if you have random notes in a song, you're like, oh, that doesn't fit, you know. It shouldn't belong. You have mm-hmm. to trim it down.
Yeah.
That's why I said the editing process. So I would be surprised, or I wouldn't be surprised, if when you talk to musicians where they have all these ideas and they have all these sounds coming out of their head and they're making this music, and then they find, you know what, maybe this doesn't work. They're trying to add something that doesn't work, and so they peel that away, and then they keep going, and oh, okay, so now this, maybe needs to move here,
right.
but this part doesn't fit, but it can go somewhere else, or it needs to fall off. You know, I'm pretty sure, or I wouldn't be surprised if that's how some people worked anyway. It'd be really interesting to see.
It's so interesting. Yeah. Oh, I know. There's so many parallels. Well, I'm fascinated by the fact that, you know, this published author came up to you and knew you were a writer from the way that you read. That is so interesting to me. I wonder what it was specifically that, I mean, did he say, or as a writer, do you know what it was that made him say
it was
that?
My, it's how I pronounced words, not really pronounced them, but just maybe my inflection, but also my cadence, my timing, you know, I'm not a poet. Yeah.
Okay.
It's the words I emphasize, but I don't have a cadence, you know, that's poetry is kind of the musical. It's the most musical for sure of all writing. If you ever read any of my poetry, most of it doesn't rhyme. Although I'm working on that, it doesn't have to rhyme, but it's just weird. It's clunky, you know? So when I read, I'm trying to make up for that, perhaps. And I've practiced on it's when I read a story, I read it slowly. I talk like this, and I will continue the story and take long pauses when there are commas or periods, and then keep going.
Right,
every syllable gets enunciated. And that's just part of, you know, growing up with a speech impediment. It's just my overcompensation.
Sure. Wow. Well, it's so important though. You know, I think some people, our natural tendency, and you talk about channeling that energy, people's natural tendency is to talk too fast or to read too fast or to not embrace the pause or the change of inflection or the change of, you know, and that kind of stuff is so important when you're doing that. But that's great, man. You know, somebody who has a little bit more experience, you know, and can offer you feed. I mean, that's invaluable.
Oh, yeah.
That's so important.
A lot more experience. I think he's been writing for 40 years. He's not an established writer like that for 40 years. He was an anthropology professor.
Right.
And,
okay. Oh, dang.
Which I've always really liked anthropology. I took anthropology classes in college from the same professor about China. You know, it's basically anthropology is basically modern history. You know, you're learning about people now.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my, I really like that view. You know, you're learning about different cultures and different people. So it's a really cool lens to have. Yeah. So this guy, Cary Feldman, he's just, He's smart. You know, the first conversation we had was so funny. I was in the cafe. It was a Wednesday. This was last month. And I just went there around 3:30. You know, I've been lounging around all day. It's like, I need to do something. So I went there, had a cup of coffee. I was reading. And I was kind of lethargic. I was reading. And if I read for too long, I get kind of tired. So I was like, oh, man, get tired. Well, I noticed an event was happening at 7. And I assumed some live music because that's been mostly what I've seen at that cafe is some live music. I'm like, okay, kind of cool, random, you know, on a Wednesday, whatever. People start showing up and ladies start handing out a flyer and I take one. It's poetry reading. I'm like, oh, well, I got to stay now. Now I have to stay. Yeah, I've been here it's 6:30 at this point. I've been here for 3 hours and this runs until 9. So I was there a good chunk of time. And I was lethargic. You know, I was like, it's about 6:45 now. And I'm like, I need a cup of coffee. So I go stand in line. There's a ton of people in line. I say, hey, are you in line? He's like, yep. So he steps forward. And he looks at me, he's like, I don't know what he said the first thing he said. We just struck up a conversation. Oh, I think because I just looked out of place, you know. He said, are you? I look out of place everywhere. I'm a big redheaded guy. But I was wearing, I just happened to be wearing one of my only buttoned up nice shirts. You know, I had the sleeves rolled up, so it was pretty, informal, but still button up shirt and stuff. So
sure.
He kind of looked at me and said, right. Where are you from? I said, Oregon. You know, he started talking. And the one thing I remember, like that really stands out is he said, where'd you get your education? Cause you think he just knew I could think differently. He just, that was his thought process. He said, wow. Where'd you get your education? And so he knew I had an education. You know, it was like Oregon State University.
Right.
Said, no, that's not where you got it. I'm like, okay. And he said, yeah, most people wouldn't be able to follow along because we were talking about some weird stuff. I don't know exactly, but I remember he said, most people wouldn't be able to follow along, you know, with the kind of conversation we're having. And he said something about language. And he said, if we were dolphins, we'd be talking. And then he made a dolphin noise. I'm not going to try and remake his dolphin noise, but he just made it. I was like, wow. What the hell? Wow. This guy is, we've been talking for like 2 minutes. This is probably one of the weirdest conversations, you know, and I'm just slapping myself in my head. Wake up, you know, and then I was like following along with him.
Right.
It was really funny. It's just a funny interaction. And then he bought me a cup of coffee. And I checked out his book. So he read some poetry and I checked out his book. And so I saw him earlier this week and he offered to read some of my stuff. And so I'm pretty excited to start growing that community.
Absolutely. No, it's so important. And that's why people, you know, when people write songs, people will have songwriting sessions where you get together with at least one other person, but usually several other people. And I don't, just more, the more minds who can contribute to something, the better, you know, it's just, I think there's danger sometimes in getting trapped in your own head and not being able to bounce things off somebody, at least one other person. But, I've never really thought about all the parallels between writing a story and writing a song. So interesting. That's really cool.
I couldn't fathom
he sounds like an interesting guy. I hope he really?
Yeah. I mean,
I think you'd be really good at it.
Maybe the words, right? I can probably get a song down from words, you know, because sometimes I'll just be riffing some poetry. You know, I'll just like start with a few lines. There's a poem I wrote a few months ago and I wrote it while I was driving because I got the inspiration while driving. So I, you know, recited it over and over again. I can't forget it. I got to the Jackson Creek store,
right.
You know, and I went in the back and I wrote it down real quick. But the music part, the sheet music part, you know, I couldn't because I don't know how to play those instruments. And so my knowledge would be like downloading some, like if GarageBand on an iPhone or something, be like boom. Boots, boom, boom, boots on the garage band that you like it. So
sure,
would it be?
Sure. Yeah.
If I'm gonna make a song, I would love to record. That's why I started collecting so many instruments. Record every single part myself. If I had to do it that way,
right?
And bring it together that way, it feasibly how I would see it, because I just don't have the, you know, instruments or the people who play them around me, technically.
But I think that's where collaboration comes into play, right? Because, you know, you might be where someone would be lacking in, you know, creative sentence structure or being efficient with words, or, you know, finding a different word than that one that's not as cliche or whatever. You know, that's the kind of stuff that you could help with. And then somebody who's maybe a little bit more, you know, experienced or skilled musically or developing the melody can help bring it all together. But that's what's great about collaborating with somebody. So, you know, I think maybe we should try that one of these
times. Have a little jam session. And it's really about bouncing ideas off. It's about being open. I think with music too, it's just about being like, well, how about, let's try this. You know, just try it for trying it, for the sake of trying it.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Hey, what's your book about?
Yeah, so
can you share yet? Do you even, can you give it a synopsis?
The working title is Transcending. I stole that one from you. And
I love that word. I love it. I love it so much. It's in our company vision
so
statement.
the title's Transcending. I even with the change that I made, I still think that's the right word to use for the title. I can't think of anything else. And I'm terrible at titles. And lately I will write the story and then think of the title, but about 10,000 words in, I said, this is the word, because it's kind of a focal point. Anyway, title's Transcending, and quick one-liner is, this is, story is about a motivational speaker who isn't motivated anymore. And you're not going to get what you expect. I can tell you that. It's that's all I got to say about it, because there's a lot going on.
That's great. I can't wait to read it when it's finished. And then plug your blog.
You can,
what's the name of your blog?
Check out my work. I publish or I post 5 days a week at luciddaydreaming.com. So I have my creative process on world building on Tuesdays. Wednesdays are poems. Yesterday, Fridays are my short story days. So I sit down either at the computer. Yesterday I was in a cafe. I had some inspiration to write a story. And so I wrote a short story. It's titled It Was Dark. So that's up. And Saturdays are my journals. So yeah, luciddaydreaming.com. A lot of things happening on there. A lot of basically my writing process and just my outlet for my creative work. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so cool too. And you've, what I love too, is you've added the visual element. You've got some really good pictures.
Thank you. All those pictures I have taken. Cool to see.
Took with your Google Pixel something or other.
Well, thankfully,
right?
Google Photos, which I've been logged into the same account since 2011, I think, I have quite the album of photos to choose from. Although most photos are recent. Most photos are with my Google Pixel, but I have photos going back.
Oh, that helps.
For years. Like yesterday, the title, the story In the Dark, or It Was Dark, basically about a snowstorm. And so I went into Google Photos, I guess a plug for Google for you, and just typed in snow, and it brought up all my pictures that had snow in them. Some weren't right, you know, but one was me wearing a Santa hat, but close enough. I'll give it to you, Google. That's pretty cool. So usually I love taking pictures of flowers. So usually if you haven't noticed, there's a theme of flowers on the website. So,
I love it. That's great. Luciddaydreaming.com. Good stuff. Well, this was awesome, man. I wanted to hop on to test my remote recording, and we just recorded an hour long podcast. So this is fantastic.
Yeah, we had a full podcast. Yeah. I know we can just get to talking, but I can see how Joe Rogan can talk for about 3 hours in one podcast. Right. I understand it.
Well, thanks for talking music and writing and everything in between.
Of course.
We'll have to do this again. All right. This is my brother, Luke Campbell, joining me on Beyond the Band.
And that's going to do it for this episode of Beyond the Band. If you haven't already, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We are now on Apple and Google Podcasts, as well as Spotify and many others, so check those out. And if you like the show, please leave a rating and review. That helps more people find us. And after you do that, please tell a friend. Finally, if you haven't already, please follow the show on Instagram and Facebook at Beyond the Band Pod. And we're also on the web at beyondthebandpod.com. Thank you. I love you.
I love you.
Okay, I'll talk to you later.
I'll talk to you later.
Okay, bye.